Hey, you found the LinuxInstall.net podcast. This is episode number 119, recorded on Tuesday, July 22nd, 2014. Hacking the Pogo Plug. Hey, guess what? On this week's episode, we're going to talk about hacking the Pogo Plug, what you can do with it, some quick things to think about when you get one. And oh yeah, by the way, there's a link on the show notes, so you'll want to go check out the website, LinuxInstall.net, and you can get one for $8. That's what got us all started. But don't forget, we don't charge anything for our podcast, and we live on your feedback, so give us your feedback at LinuxInstall on Twitter, on Plus, we have the plus.linuxinstall.net group page there, and you can, of course, find us on Facebook as linuxinstall.net also. But without further ado, let's get started. Hello, and welcome to another edition of the linuxinstall.net podcast. Still having trouble with that live button. When it goes live, it's really hard to tell. Anyways, I am Brian Wagner. With me tonight is it's just me and the Waltz. Mr. Walt Jubeck.
Yes, yes it is.
Yes. Back to only two hosts. Don't even know if we made it 2 weeks in a row with three, but that's okay. Summer, kind of got to expect that.
Yeah, stuff happens.
So what have you been up to in the world of Linux or with Linux, Walt?
Well, apparently I'm making you buy stuff.
Yeah, we'll get to that in a minute.
Nothing. Other than that,
making me buy stuff.
Yeah, basically, I'm being cable installer for the last bunch of days at work, so I haven't really had time to do any cool fun things.
You had to do physical stuff.
Yes, today I got showered in metal filings as we cut support poles and the ceiling, and it saws all, so it was pretty fun.
Wow, did you cut the supports completely or?
We needed to shorten them because we repurposed some, I guess there were probably maybe 19 or 20 some inch TV mounts that are now camera mounts. So okay. Little creative engineering, cut off the bottom U part of the thing and then shorten the pole and drilled a couple holes and screwed them out, cameras in upside down. So now I got cameras.
Cool.
It took all day. Government work, you know.
Yeah, you're a government employee, so yeah. Anyways, I'm not gonna rip on you because you made me buy shit.
That's right. So what do you do this week? Anything good?
Yeah, look at you, like a freaking Cheshire cat you are. Yes, I did stuff this week. I have been playing with all kinds of different things, getting like I've been saying, trying to migrate some stuff off to some lower power machines, and somebody who's on this podcast with me decided today that he was going to post a little post on Google Plus that basically cost me $30, more or less. and we'll have the link in the show notes for this, but you too can be the owner of a Pogo plug for the low, low price of $8 a piece. Since they were only $8, the
one. Yep, this one right here.
The one that Walt's holding.
Very nice.
I am now the owner of three of them. Well, I will be as soon as I get here. But the site is... I don't see it. What's the site called, Walt?
I don't know. It used to be buy.com.
Oh, it used to be buy.com.
Yeah, now it's like Rezukin or something. Yeah, it's crazy. A weird name.
But anyways, it's $8 a piece, and they have, for some reason, free two-day shipping with it. Which didn't make any sense to me, but whatever, I'm not going to complain.
Yeah. They've got to be losing on that.
Like, really? That it's already 90% off, and then on top of it being 90% off, they're going to give me free two-day shipping. Okay. And if you bought one, they would have given you two-day shipping. I happen to buy three of them. That doesn't really seem to change anything. Although it did cost me $5 in shipping and handling fees, so they at least made $5.
Right. Yeah, see, I would have went the old cheapo and just when I got here.
No, that was it. If I went with the slower stuff, it cost more.
Oh, really?
Really messed up.
I said it was free, though. I said free shipping.
It was free for shipping, but there was a handling fee. It was only $5. It was like, whatever. I wasn't too worried about it. I still, Yeah, I was still out the door for that. I can't even comment. Anyways, I'll have a link in the show notes, or if you're watching this on YouTube, it'll be linked at the bottom down there when we get done. But I don't want to do that now. So I now am the proud owner of those. But besides that, I have just been tinkering. I haven't really accomplished a darn lot with Linux. I've been writing a bunch of blog posts for my other site. It's been the focus for the last couple of days. And I had like house stuff that has been being avoided that just had to get done, like cleaning out the garage.
Ooh, I did that too.
That took like 2 days.
I did it in a day. But actually, I didn't really clean it as much as just move things around.
I actually, we used the leaf blower to blow all the dust out. Does that count for cleaning?
Oh, yeah.
Sweep it away from the walls. Okay, good enough. Leaf blower, big dust storm as it blows out the door. And yeah, we're done. No, but we also reorganized the whole thing, and we had my wife did probably way more work than I did, really. But I moved some stuff around just to make it easier. My garage looks considerably bigger now, and it's still got all the same stuff in there.
Oh, yeah.
I don't understand how that happened. But
that must have been a thing to do this week. I helped my father-in-law run some electric in his because he redid his whole garage, too.
Yeah. I'm looking at mine. I need to put some more electric up there so that I can put some more Linux-y stuff in there, like sensors and stuff. Because I don't really have any power. I have power on two walls.
You can turn one of these into a remote media server with a USB.
Oh, I could put a USB camera on
audio there. Dongle, which I have one in this drawer.
I was just gonna get a camera like the $40 Gear Pro I'm using to talk to you right now. And
there you go, this guy right here. Blink.
Wow.
It's a SYBA USB stereo sound adapter, recognized by most of the plug Linuxes. So you can pop that thing in there, run an AirPlay server, and like if you got iTunes or something like that, just stream all your music right to the plug and whatever speakers you got plugged into. It's pretty cool.
Cool.
Yeah, man, I got a drawer full of future project gear that was on sale.
Well, and that's kind of what we're going to talk about tonight is now that I've bought these, that you've convinced me to buy them, let's talk about hacking devices. Because I don't think, and I'm sure Joe and I have talked about hacking stuff before, and I've done it, but you and I both have actually hacked stuff and do on a somewhat regular basis hack stuff. You know, you for the purpose of replacing large Dell servers with very small Pogo plugs. Me just to do it, and
I didn't really plan on doing it. It just sort of worked out that way.
Well, yeah, but still, dude, it's kind of super cool that you replaced probably something. What did we decide? We're probably pulling 200 at least 300 watts.
Yeah,
with something maybe pulling 17.
Right. Maybe.
I'm going to get these, and you've convinced me that I need to, and it didn't take much convincing, but you convinced me to put... You convinced me to put, well, I'm either going to put Arch or Debian on there.
Do one of each.
I have three. I can do one of each. I don't know what I'll do with the third one then.
Well, whatever.
Decide whichever one works easiest, I'll do on the third one.
There you go.
And so those are my choices. Now, I did put Arch on the Pi. And I like Arch. I don't know. I don't know why I would choose one over the other. Can you think of a reason to choose?
Yes, one? There's a couple reasons actually. I've ran both. On my original pink Pogo plug, I had put Debian. On my actually I have it right here. My Seagate GoFlex Home, which the base is basically a Pogo plug with a 3.5-inch hard drive docked on it. I ran Arch. Just at the time to see what the difference was between the two. But as we were actually talking about before the show, the OS differences are one thing to consider, whatever you're more comfortable with, maybe whatever has the packages compiled, because the Arch ecosystem or the ARM ecosystem in previous years did not necessarily have the same library that a Intel binary repo would have had. So if you needed particular applications, there's a chance that maybe somebody had compiled it and it was in the Debian repo, but it wasn't in the Arch or vice versa. In fact, many years ago, Arch had the bigger library. Now they're probably both similar. But the device support between the two are a little bit different. And in the case of these new ones that we're getting, or you're getting that I have in my hand, the Debian U-Boot, which is the bootloader replacement application, allows you to boot from the SD card, where the Arch Linux U-Boot only lets you boot from the USB. So depending upon which one you want to do and or what you might want to use the other port for, you know, that's also a decision that may drive you one way or another.
And I'm thinking a few weeks ago, maybe a month ago now, I managed to catch a deal that Amazon had for pretty much any size SD card, and I picked up the 32 gig ones because they were like $12 a piece, I think,
mm-hmm.
for the high speed 32 gig. So that would probably be what I would use in these devices because I have two of them.
Yeah.
I would just order another one at some point whenever I see them on sale again.
And I haven't actually done anything with this yet. It's still, you know, virgin out of box, basically. But one of the reasons why I hadn't done anything with it is because it only has the one USB port. You know, it would end up having been just another server that I couldn't really do anything in addition to add that sound card, add wireless to, things like that. But now that I know Debian, I'll actually boot off the SD. I'm probably going to mess with this during the week and then, you know, figure out what else I want to make it or have it do. But that gives me a reason to goof around a little bit more. The DockStars I thought were really cool just because you can have a hard drive on it. And we talked about the HP microservers, you know, that I run for my NAS and ESXi box and whatnot. But before that existed, this was my NAS. I ended up putting a 2 gig green hard drive in here to keep power and heat and everything very low. And then it ran Arch, and I just set up Samba file shares. And I did that for a couple of years, and it worked pretty good. You're limited to transfer speeds, of course, because the ARM system and the actual bus of that device is not super fast. So I was only maybe pulling between 30 and 40 megasecond file transfers, you know, where now I can do 90 or 100 easy. But, you know, I think I paid $20 for that whole device, not with the hard drive in it, but for the housing and everything at the time. So for a $20 file server and whatever drive you had laying around, it was a pretty good deal.
Yeah, and are they still selling the DockStars?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Yeah, you can get them on eBay. They become a little more popular once everybody found out you can hack them and do all kinds of cool things, of course. But you can still get just the housing for, it's probably $30, maybe $35 now. It went up a little bit, but it wasn't ridiculous. If you don't care about the really nice plastic top part, you know, this is in a shell, but
yeah.
There's your normal SATA headers on there. So if you just want to plug the drive in, you can save a little money by not buying the shell part and just, you know, just get the base, which is cool. And then as far as the top part goes too, it's the same interface as their USB drive. So if you had an old USB one around and you wanted to make it networkable, you know, you can save a little bit on that too, which is kind of neat.
I see. Yeah, because I'm starting to get quite a collection of USB 2.0 hard drives, basically external hard drives that I picked up as the prices fell, right? You know,
yep.
My wife's out doing the Black Friday thing here in the States where everything under the sun is on sale for ridiculous prices and picked me up like one or two terabyte Western Digital drives. And those things, you know, they're designed to do exactly what I'm doing with them, but I don't use them enough to put any wear on them that I'm actually concerned that they're going to break.
Right.
And so it works okay. It works fine. But I don't have a lot of use for it because now I just back everything up. I'm using CrashPlan. I back all my stuff up to CrashPlan in the cloud, and I have a local backup on one of my machines here, and that's it. I'm good. I don't really have any other reason to use those drives.
Yeah. Actually, yeah. I keep one because when I buy a new computer, I'll immediately do a factory image of an image of the factory, you know, drive. So many years later when I want to sell it, I can blast, you know, go either ghost or a disk image or whatever back on. So that's the only thing I use my external USB for, is to keep those images.
Oh, okay. Yeah. And I want to probably take one of the three, and I'm going to make it my NFS server for my images for my OpenStack.
Mm.
Because I have pretty much convinced myself that I am going to take my VMware ESX server and say goodbye to it.
No, you were my only hope on getting that updated, because I didn't want to put any effort in.
I have been doing some research on that, and I may still keep it around. I don't know. But these little low power boxes, you know, it would be nice to not have services that my entire network depends on running on my ESX box, so that I could do more with it without having to worry about impacting the wife and children.
This is true.
So I'm still debating what I'm going to do for a firewall, because I kind of want to buy a dedicated firewall box. I think I'm just going to do DDWRT for now, because I like Walt have a collection of small devices that I picked up for somewhere between $15 and $20. And one of those would be back there somewhere. There's a Linksys router that I can put DDWRT onto and then run that as my firewall, and another guest network basically for devices and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm probably going to do that for the firewall. So that gets the firewall off my ESX box, and then I'll have DNS off both on the Pi and one or more of these other boxes. And then I'm still thinking about building out an application to do that stuff. I'm playing with Gunnery. Now that I got Arch working properly, and I have expanded to take up the full disk, the full image size on the Pi, because that Pi had that image and it was locked. It wasn't locked, but the initial image is only 2 gigs, and then you have to expand it in like gparted or something on Linux to expand the volume out to take advantage of the full size. It's not anything hard to do, but it's something that you must remember to do before you start trying to use it, which I didn't the last time.
Right.
So I ended up starting with it doesn't take but a few minutes to re-image the SD card. This time I actually expanded it to the full size, and so I'm going to try pulling some other stuff on there, because I just ran out of space with 2 gigs.
Yeah, that image is actually pretty full to begin with.
Right. Yeah, I'm kind of wondering, like, long-term, if they're going to have problems like they're starting to have with the CD releases of stuff like Ubuntu, where they really can't do the CD release anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Because there just isn't... You couldn't put everything you need to put on to a boot image and still have it fit on 700 meg. It's just over. But it's not much over, but it's just over.
Well, so, some of that's because it's a live image, too. I've argued that for a while, that they just need to make an install image, and that would probably eliminate a lot of that.
Yeah, it probably would.
Or enough that I can get it back down to CD size anyways.
Right, so that you could do some just CD installs. And that
right.
Because I don't know, I haven't looked. I don't think the server install, which doesn't have the live functionality, I don't think the server one is as big.
No, I haven't had to do a server in a while because I've just been LTS upgrading.
Yeah.
But the server one still might fit, or did this last one get big enough it needed a DVD also?
I don't know.
I don't remember.
I'm looking to see because I just downloaded it. I don't see it. Oh, there it is. The server is only 591 meg, so no.
That's what I thought. It's on CD. Because I remember thinking that a lot of my older servers don't have DVD drives in them. So I was like,
Yes. Not that you can't pick up. I mean, DVD drives are another thing that are just ridiculously cheap. Like, you can get a SATA DVD drive for Blu-ray DVD drive for like $20 if you watch.
Oh, yeah. But not for old Dell servers that are still SCSI based or Parallel ACA.
Yes.
Yeah, all that new funky, fancy, cheap stuff doesn't do that any good.
No, it does not. So when I want to do this, basically we're saying all I have to do is burn the image, or burn an image, pick an image, burn an image to the S. Well, I guess if I'm going to burn it to the SD card, I have to do the Debian one.
Yeah, this doesn't work like that. The very abridged version is you register the Pogo like you would if you were going to use it as bought. Once you do that, there is a function through the website's interface where you can turn on SSH. Once SSH is turned on, you can then remote into the device itself you plug in whatever media that you're going to eventually boot off of. And then depending upon the distribution, you download the appropriate U-boot scripts, and then you download a tar, gzip tar of a default image that gets extracted to your boot boot disk. And then depending upon, you know, some of them, it'll, like, you know, in the case of like the DocStars, it'll let, or not the DocStars, the home, whatever this thing is, the GoFlex, you can boot off of the US, this one you can actually boot off the USB on the back or the hard drive. But in real time, as you're setting it up, you have to go and modify the scripts to tell it which one you're booting off of, because, you know, the generic install doesn't know some of those things. So once you get everything all kind of set in real time, then when you reboot, the default OS isn't there anymore. It now uses the new U-boot to boot into whichever drive you wanted. And hopefully you got your scripts right so it actually comes up.
Okay.
And then, of course, if you didn't get your scripts right, if the U-boot works, you can just kind of secure into that, do some minimal fixing, you know, you need to change root into the other system and whatnot, and usually get it back. If that doesn't work, most of the Pogo plugs actually have serial connectors on their motherboards. So you got to open the thing up and put a JTAG, you know, serial connector on it. But then you can actually recover from that. It's a lot more work, but so, you know, you can't, like, I shouldn't say you can't, but it's pretty hard to, like, brick one of these things, as long as you're willing to go through the serial route to recover it. It's fairly easy to do something if you miss a slash, or, you know, you put a D instead of a C or whatever. And then depending upon the device, like in the case of the Seagate is, no, not the Seagate. I think in the case of my original Pogo Pink, if, the U-boot in there first checks for a USB device. If there is, it tries to boot off of that. If not, it didn't erase the OS on the internal flash. So then it'll actually boot the original Pogo OS. So that one's pretty easy for me to recover if I screw something up on the USB disk, because you just basically start over again. In the case of the GoFlex, I had to load the U-boot onto the internal NAND, blowing away all the Pogo stuff. So this can no longer ever be a Pogo plug anymore. It's always going to be like some hacker toy. So if that got screwed up, some of them, they have some scripts where you could try to reverse it, but a lot of them, that's where you're like, whoops, and then, yeah, you know, you're soldering some serial connectors on. So there is a little, right.
Yeah. Now, one of the things I was going to ask you, because you have one, according to the website that I just bought three of these off of, and I don't really care if it does or not, it made it sound like there was wireless on it, and I couldn't find any reference where any Pogo ever made anything that had wireless built in.
No, there's not. I'm not sure why that is either.
Because it's kind of odd.
Was it the for sale site said wireless, or was it the...
Yeah, it's Rakuten.com is the site. I don't know why they came up with that name. But it is Pogo Plug Mobile, and it says wireless backup access and share your PC, Mac, tablet, and smartphone from anywhere.
But I'll put it to you this way. If the device physically has wireless in it, there is no device driver to take advantage of it.
Yeah. And it doesn't mention wireless anywhere else in the specifications.
Yeah. Yeah, to the best of my knowledge, none of them had that. I know, like we were talking ahead of time, you know, some of the devices don't have full device support for all the different features. Like, you can't boot off of certain interfaces, but you can use them for mass storage once the OS is up, because the OS has the device driver for it.
Right.
But yeah, to the best of my knowledge, none of them do wireless.
I see. So, yeah. So this is going to be like super cool and exciting.
Yeah, it's fun
to do this.
And then the neat thing is trying to push it to see like how much you can actually get it to do, you know, within reasonable parameters.
Within reasonable parameters is that's a tall order there.
So as an example, for some reason, I think your Twitter is forwarding to Facebook or something, but I've been getting like a whole bunch of news posts from you.
Yeah.
Maybe you've been doing it on purpose. I'm not sure.
No. Well, yes, sort of.
One of them was I think it was a top five Linux multimedia somethings. I forget exactly what the article was, but it had mentioned a web-based media management system called Jinzora, J-I-N-Z-O-R-A.
Okay.
And it looked pretty cool. I'm actually going to try to get that running on this Pogo if I get it up and going. There's a GitHub. I think they're on Jinzora version 3. And it basically says it needs PHP, MySQL, or Ladder. Isn't required, but recommended. So I'll have to read to see what that's all about. And then it says Apache or IIS, and it says other web servers may work. So, of course, I'll try to get it to work with Lighty because that works, you know, pretty good on these lower-end devices. But it looks like it's some sort of basically it'll organize all your media files and somehow play or stream them and maybe even, I mean, I won't be able to do any transcoding or whatever, but all web-based.
Cool. They are on, that's J-I-N-Z-O-R-A.
Correct.
Well, there's Jinzora Mobile for iPhone, for Android.
Yeah, and then they have like a bunch of apps that somehow talk to your server and look kind of cool. It might be a little bit more powerful than what this thing can do. I might end up spinning up a VM for it.
Because it might suck too much.
Once I read through. But it looked like it did all the same stuff that like an XBMC or, you know, Plex did, you know, that we've talked about before, where it'll scrape for all the show information and
yeah, it might just take forever to do it.
Oh yeah, I'm sure it'll take forever on that little box.
Because I had to turn that off. That was a feature on the MyCloud, is that it'll like identify all your music for you.
Right, and those HP. Yeah, that's another box I got sitting over here doing.
Yeah, it's Western Digital. Western Digital MyCloud, and I have one, and they're great. It's nice. I do need to look at the memory on that, and I may be hacking that because I thought I was going to use it for a thing, and then it didn't really come to fruition. So I'm going to have to go see if I can hack that too, and see if I can see if that has more memory in it.
Yep.
What I'm really looking for is just more memory. I really don't care about CPU. I need memory. I think you're going to be challenged with this Jinzora because of MySQL.
Well, I'm not sure. It says it's not required, just highly recommended. So we'll see.
We'll
see what you don't get if you don't use it. Again, I haven't really looked at it other than, oh, that looks cool.
Yeah. I wonder if they're using, if you don't use that, well, which would work for home. You wouldn't want to use it. Well, you probably wouldn't want to use this anywhere where you'd be public anyways. But for just home stuff, SQLite would work, or SQLite. Right. Would probably work. That's probably what
it is. Yeah, it's got like all kinds of CMS integration and a bunch of other things. So, I mean, even like, you know, at work, we record a lot of our video conferences and whatnot. And I thought maybe something like this would be something I could set up there to, you know, have a little player that's a little bit better than just the default. Here's a list of all your files and date order. So if a user logs in, they can actually get some information on it, you know, depending upon what it can do. Like I said, I haven't seen anything more other than, oh wow, that looks cool, went to the GitHub and bookmarked it. So
right. I was looking for pictures.
Yeah, I haven't seen any photos anywhere. The main website's gone. It only seems to be on GitHub now. Like if you actually go to their main.org, it comes up no site found. But the last update was only a month ago. So somebody's still working on it.
Yeah, there's only one picture I can find. And that actually isn't a bad user interface. If it's on linuxlinks.com. Post that for you. It doesn't look bad. I don't know where it got all the information, though. So that might be a problem, where it's pulling information from, that is.
Yeah, and that's what happens with a lot of those outdated software, is the scrapers that they were using use, you know, services that no longer exist or change their APIs or we're running in, or I shouldn't say we talked about the Chumby service coming back online a couple shows ago. And that's one of the big things now, is that a lot of the users are firing up the old apps that they used to use all the time. And they're finding that either some of them, the backend services just physically don't exist anymore. Or I think I had mentioned anyways, but a lot of the APIs have changed. So, the cool thing is that the hype around that's still going enough where some of the original app developers came out of retirement, for lack of a better word, and updated all their apps to work with the new system and, you know, fix whatever issues there were. So it's still picking up steam. And the best part, I got to give a shout out to Dwayne, because I had mentioned before that the only reason why I kept it was for the Lacar Star Trek clock. See if I can get it to where it's not glaring. There we go. And he gave it back to everybody for free. So yeah, that was super awesome.
That's a good PR move on his part.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. So, I mean, I probably won't run any other apps, but once he goes to a pay-by-year subscription, I'll pay at least a year just because he did that.
Yeah.
Yeah, even though I won't run anything else. So, yeah, that was super cool.
Very, very cool. All right, so I got a bunch of hacker stuff showing up. It's going to ship tomorrow. Then it'll be 2 days. So tomorrow's Wednesday. Yay! That means it'll be here by Friday. Sometime Friday.
Just in time for the weekend.
Just in time for the weekend, except that I get to move my mom this weekend. So.
Doesn't she know you have important hacker stuff going on?
Yeah, she doesn't care. She's too excited. She has a new house. She's very excited. I'm very excited for her. So,
get her cool.
Get her in the new place, and then she'll be all happy. Happy, happy. Except that she's got all white carpeting, which she keeps sweating and you know, fretting over.
Oh boy.
Yeah. But the house is nice. So, or the condo is nice. It's not really a house. It's a condo.
Yeah. But wait a little bit and swap that carpet out.
That's what I said. You can always swap it out later. It's not impossible to change. So
apparently with enough money, you can pretty much do anything.
Yeah. Yeah, there's that whole money situation, though. She is semi-retired, so.
True.
Not sure that money is in as abundant supply as it once was. Let's put it that way. But, I think that does it for this week. I don't have anything else really to talk about. Do you?
Nope. That was it.
We'll keep you updated on what we hack and slash and put together. And I hopefully will have some time, maybe not this weekend, but later to stand up some more boxes and get on my way so that I can do OpenStack right. Sure. That's what I mean.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And once you figure it all out, I'll just cookie cutter.
There you go. Yeah, I'll write automation for you. Sure I will. I don't know. Actually, on that front, the ESX, that's what I was going to – I was going to say something about that. On the ESX front, I sent you a link to – I just, of course, forgot what it's called. But there's – I found an – it's a product or project now owned by OpenStack, by Red Hat, that lets you – what is it called? Manage IQ. That lets you manage ESX machines from a web interface, basically. I'm having some issues, which I think are password related, because I had to consistently set up passwords on that box for some reason. So I need to probably fix a few things. But I also looked, and I think I could just upgrade to ESX 5.5, which as soon as I get all these required services off of my ESX box so that I can screw it up without concern, I will then be able to take that and upgrade it. And hopefully I can upgrade it to 5.5 and this Manage IQ will work better, because some of the interface stuff I think is missing because it's not the latest and greatest.
But it looks cool. Let me know how that goes.
Yeah. You
know? So here's the getcha is can you run that interface on a VM
that's on the host? Yes.
That's on the host. That's pretty much what I'd have to do.
That's what I'm doing right now, is I'm running it on the host.
I don't really want it to spin up another box just to manage my virtual machines.
Oh, what is this? Oh, what is this password?
Although it would be nice not to have to do it on Windows anymore. That's one of the few things I need the Windows box still for, is to manage that VM server. Well, I shouldn't say need, but it's much, much more convenient doing it through that interface than command line or any of the alternatives at this point.
Yeah, let's let's do a quick screen share and I'll show you what it looks like. Which is going to be so awesome for everybody listening to the podcast. I'm sorry. You'll have to check out the... Let's check it out. But you can see there's my 28 virtual machines that I have. Some of them set up.
There it is. Yay.
Some of them are running. Some of them aren't. You can see, green arrows are the ones that are actually running. Red boxes are stopped. The OS detection is pretty accurate.
The ones that are Red Hat, though, are really CentOS. That is actually a Windows box. This one it doesn't know, which is kind of funny. This one actually is accurately detected as CentOS, even though this one is also CentOS. I don't know why. I haven't bothered to look into it. And this is actually FreeBSD. This is pfSense.
Oh, yes.
That's not Linux, which is what that logo is. So yeah, I guess it's not as good as I thought it was. And then it also saw, because I told it to look at my network. So this is the machine itself. And then this is the IP address of my workstation, this is the IP address of my OpenStack machine. And it actually recognized that it was running that. And if I click on this, then you can see there's just a different way to look at the machines. If I click on them, this is my Ansible server I was working on. You can see.
So you can actually create new and everything from there then, huh?
Yeah. I will be able to when I can do everything. Right now I'm having some issues, like I said. Because if I try to restart the machine, I can't even restart machines. And I think that's because it's a password issue. It's not the software. It's a software configuration issue, not the other stuff. And I think it might be because I'm not even current on patches on the version of ESX I'm on. So there probably is some bug somewhere that gets fixed when I do that.
Right. Because that was one thing I noticed, that there was a couple of solutions that managed existing servers existing VMs fairly well. But if you wanted to create a new one, you still had to go in the command line and, create a default or a new, container or whatever. And yeah, then you can go in through the web and then modify that. But that was still one step more than I really wanted to putz with.
Yeah, and I had some issues with some of the other ones, which is why I kind of like this one. Several of the other ones, you couldn't do anything but start and stop the VMs. You couldn't do anything but stop and start the VMs unless you had created the VMs with ESX or with the tool. So
right. Over I remember you telling me that too.
And there was something else. And it was like, you can't control, that's dumb. I mean, if you took the time to be able to control them once they're built, what? There's no difference in the commands. I've scripted stuff to control VMs. There's no difference between existing and new. I don't understand why it's a big deal. Some of it, too, they kind of wanted you to go more towards a image repository, which you then boot from, or then you pull from, to create new images. And I'm like, well, I'm okay with that, but how do I create the initial image? And then it got to be a real pain in the ass when I tried to create original images. And I'm like, it shouldn't be that hard to create an original image. Like, that shouldn't be that hard. I have the same problem with Docker right now. I gave up playing with Docker for a little while because I was getting frustrated with it, because it didn't seem like anybody has taken the time to write up, this is how you create your own base image. Because I don't want to use the Ubuntu image that they have, because when I download the Ubuntu image that Docker has, it pulls back every release they've done, and I pull down these huge 200 megabyte chunks that I don't need. They're software updates, it's like all the software that's there has been replaced in updates further down the line. And it is one of the issues that I have with Docker right now. The Docker stuff doesn't per se let you trim anything. So you can't draw a line in the sand and say, I know nothing from this image and back is being used. So, but alas, that is a fight for another day. I will figure it all out eventually. What else did I want to tell you? I don't know. I think that's it. That's all I have. That's all I think you said you had.
Yep.
So don't forget to follow us on Twitter. We're at Linux Install on Twitter. And we have a wonderful, vibrant, lots of people starting to follow us on the Google Plus community at plusLinuxInstallNet, at plus.google.com/plusLinuxInstallNet, all one word, no dots or anything. Then you can check out what Walt's doing over at geovec.com, and you can check out the other stuff that I'm doing, including I'm going to be recording some more podcasts tonight with my buddy Jason over at devopsmastery.com, and one of those is actually going to be a feedback one. If you're watching live, please go ahead and feel free to send me some hot off-the-presses feedback, as it were, and try to include that. I have some other feedback from some other listeners and stuff like that on the other podcasts, and I'm doing that, and hopefully next week I'll be talking about putting in my proposal for talking at Ohio Linux Fest.
Nice.
And hopefully next week, well, I don't know if we'll find out that quickly, but we'll see. So I'm going to be putting in for that and some other places. I'm really, really boosting my efforts to get more talks this year, because I want to do more talking.
Yeah.
So it'll be fun.
You have to practice.
Yeah. Yeah. So what should everybody go do, Walt?
Go spend $8, get one of these little pogos, and install some Linux.
There you go. Have a good week, everybody.
See ya.
Now we just need to get Joe to get one.
This has been a production of LinuxInstall.net. All original content produced in this podcast is released under the Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial License. Please feel free to redistribute it to your friends.